Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hej kära lyssnare, det här är Sabia. Snart ska ni få höra ett avsnitt som vi har förinspelat åt er. Jag har ju fött min bebis nu och är lite ledig från podden. Men vi är väl förberedda med ett gäng avsnitt åt er framöver. Jag ville bara hoppa in och säga en grej. Och det är om vår kurs, hypnokurs.se. Som ju är en förlossningsförberedande kurs inspirerad av hypnobirthing bland annat. Som jag om möjligt uppskattar ännu mer nu när jag precis har fött mitt tredje barn. Men mer om det sen. Det jag vill säga är bara att vi återigen har erbjuder presentkort. Så ni som vill ge bort kursen i julklapp kan göra det på ett enkelt sätt. Ni hittar all info på hypnokurs.se alltså. Jag påminner även om att friskvårdsbidraget gäller och vi finns på både e-passi och Wellnet. Okej, nu kommer avsnittet. Hallå, ni lyssnar på Okrystat med mig och Pokoa och med min lilla syster Asabia. Och idag har vi med oss en super särskild gäst, Jeanette, som pratar engelska för att hon är från Kanada. Så avsnittet idag kommer vara på engelska. Welcome, Jeanette.
I can't believe that we're going to be doing this whole thing in English. This is amazing.
I know. We're going to try anyway. Or I mean, we're going to do it in English because that's the language we all know. I'll just for you who aren't familiar with Jeanette G's work, Jeanette, you're a mom, an athlete, a perinatal therapist with a passion for helping women find strength and recovery both during pregnancy and after birth, whether that be vaginal birth or cesarean birth. Is that correct?
That's me, all the way from Toronto, Canada.
Lovely. And I found you on Instagram where you were called Ask Jeanette, right?
That's right.
If anyone wants to check that out, you have a very resourceful Instagram page where you talk a lot about preparing for birth, maybe specifically cesarean birth, right?
That's right. I do focus a lot more on cesarean birth than vaginal births, but it doesn't mean that the information is exclusively for cesarean births.
But it feels good that you shine a light on that cesarean birth, because it is pretty common around the world, and it's getting even more and more common, I would say. Do you have any statistics on how common is cesarean birth around the world?
Absolutely. Well, at this time, about 1 in 3 pregnancies result in a cesarean birth. And those are pretty high odds. I mean, if you think about it, you know, if you were betting on something and it was a 1 in 3 chance, like everybody would put their money on that. And what I wanted to highlight there is that, you know, this is the world's most common major surgery. Yet many healthcare providers like myself, we were not trained to help women prepare or recover from such a surgery. So that's 1 in 3 births around the world. In some city centers, it's higher, some are lower, but 50% of those cesareans are emergency.
In Sweden, it's about
1 in 5, right?
Yeah. So we have a bit less.
But still, one in five. That's
a little lower.
More or less 20%. And I mean, one in five, then you would presume you would also spend a fifth of the time, if you're talking about birth, when you're going to your meetings with your midwives, that a fifth of that time would be spent on talking about cesarean sections. But most people have no idea about anything, really.
Either one of
Yes, they don't know anything about birth. But if they know anything about birth, it's usually very limited about cesarean sections. More than, I mean, if either you want one or that's what you wish for, and if you don't, then you just don't know anything and don't prepare at all. Yeah. That's at least,
well,
I mean. Let's see.
If you are anything like me, I remember during my first pregnancy, this was 10 years ago, I was terrified at the idea of a cesarean.
Mm.
So like many women out there, and if you know, you're one of these women who are listening, you're not alone. If you're scared of surgery, you're not alone. And here's the thing, I just put my head in the sand and just hoped that my birth would not be a vaginal birth. And another part of that was, for me, there was a level of arrogance. You know, I'd spent all my life being an athlete.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, my body is designed to have a vaginal birth. It's not going to fail me. It'll be fine.
Exactly.
And it is that kind of, I call it arrogance, just speaking
but
from
my own.
I
like
own
that positive
experience.
Outlook, though. But you don't have to. I mean, it can also be seen as arrogance or maybe being naive if it doesn't go that way. But it still makes me happy that you had that confidence in your body's ability, because that's lacking also in many people, that they don't feel that they. How could I possibly manage this? So that still, I don't know how it went for you. But I'm still happy that you felt so confident in your body. What was
the
outcome then?
Thank you for reframing that. That's good. Okay, I'm going to say not arrogance anymore. I'm going to say confident. But overly confident maybe because I was like, my body can do this. It's never let me down. It's fine. And then also fear. I do have to highlight, though, that confidence was absolutely laced in fear. And therefore, I mean, I'm a perinatal therapist. I help women recover from vaginal and cesarean births. And I, myself, I was like, I'm not going to ask my hospital about the birthing or the surgical theater. I don't want a tour of it. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to know anything about it. I'm going to birth vaginally. And that was that.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the kind of headspace that I know many women are in. And for all your listeners, if this is you, I just want to say, bring kindness to yourself. I think this, you know, having fear surrounding birth, birth is arguably the biggest sports injury you will ever experience. And if you think of it as a sports injury, then the positive spin on that is that you will understand that it requires intentional recovery to get back to pain-free, active, strong, confident living.
Mm-hmm. And can you, did you have a cesarean birth? Can I ask? Or was it vaginal?
I didn't. Thank you for asking. So mm-hmm. both births ended up being vaginal births.
Mm-hmm.
And the second time I decided, you know what, I am going to do a prenatal class. The first time I was just so in denial that I was even pregnant. I was like, I have patients to see. I am busy. I have to earn as much money as possible to fund my maternity leave. And in Canada, 10 years ago, you know, we had a whole year off. But by the time it was my son was born with the Trudeau government, we had a year and a half off if we wanted to take that maternity leave. But you pretty much have to fund it yourself. Oh. So I digress. I was very focused on earning as much money as possible. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Year and a half, your job is protected. You would get, a little bit of federal funding. It would be the same as if you went on employment insurance here in Canada, which is, of course, definitely helpful, especially if you don't have savings that you can rest upon for whatever, a year and a half. But your job is protected.
Mm.
So Both times, though, vaginal births. The second time, I did prepare for it by going to a prenatal class. I actually took a hypnobirthing course. Mm. I wanted to know everything. I wanted to be one with the strength of my divine feminine. I dragged my husband to this. I was, you know, all in it. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of women, too, who are listening, they're like, oh, I prepared, I practiced, I breathed, I did all the prenatal exercises. And then when the birthing actually happened, it's like everything just goes out the window. You're like, oh, my goodness, what is happening to me? Right? And if we don't have coaches like the both of you to help us through it, you know, we really have to rely on what we have learned and our immediate support person, like in my case, my husband. So it's very important to prepare, not just for vaginal, but also for a cesarean birth.
Yeah. So what would you say? I mean, for if someone knows that they will be having a cesarean birth, is that, would you say that's especially important to prepare for that, or for everyone, if for birth in general, you should always prepare for both vaginal and cesarean? Or what would you say?
This is a great question. So in my opinion, it would be the second option, meaning I think every pregnant person ideally would be prepared for both types of birth. And preparation, as you both know, you can get very nitty-gritty and very detailed. But I think when someone receives the high-level information of, hey, this is what the surgery entails, this is the type of pain and inability or dysfunction to expect, let's be realistic here, here are the things that you really want to have in place in your house ahead of time. You know, here is the first, whatever, one or two exercises to do starting day one after surgery that will make a massive difference in your recovery. Mm. These are things that we can prepare for.
Yeah,
definitely. Right?
And we're going to get into all of that. You're going to give us your best tips and tricks.
Yes, absolutely.
First off, I want to ask, I think, including myself, I think a lot of our listeners are wondering, what does a perinatal therapist, what is that? What do you do? I don't know if we have that exact profession in Swedish, or I don't know the Swedish word for it anyway. So please just tell me what that is.
Well, here's the big secret, Asabia and Apukwa. Perinatal therapy is not an official designation.
Okay.
It's not a protected title any more than, let's say, doula is in Canada anyways. It's not a protected title, as doula would mean, same with, well, you know, perinatal therapist. It's someone who supports someone who is going through their pregnancy and postpartum journey in any way, shape, or form. And for me, I utilize the term perinatal therapist so someone who is pregnant will understand, okay, Jeanette is a therapist, meaning, okay, she's going to deliver some kind of manual therapy, and she's probably going to be able to give me some kind of rehabilitation exercise program. In real life, I mean, we're going to get a little philosophical here. The average healthcare consumer doesn't really know the difference between, you know, physiotherapist, massage therapist, chiropractor, osteopath, and all these things. While those are professional designations, the average person really doesn't know who to see for what anyway. So I personally have chosen the term perinatal therapist, and it is becoming a more common title that individuals give themselves, because then it helps healthcare consumers understand, okay, this is whom I might see because I am in the pregnancy / postpartum need right now, whether I'm in pain because of pregnancy or postpartum, I want to recover from my diastasis, you know, something specific to pregnancy and postpartum.
What is your background? I mean, did you start as a physiotherapist and then went over to calling yourself a perinatal therapist, or how did it start?
So my background is I'm an athletic therapist. So that is my professional designation. And a few years after attaining my athletic therapy designation, working with elite athletes, you know, taking them from the moment of injury, rehabilitating them all the way back to elite sport performance, whatever the sport, Then I also obtained my massage therapy designation. Okay. So, you know, when we, you ask a very good question because everyone's listening is like, oh, so Jeanette's an athletic therapist. What the heck does that have to do with pregnancy and postpartum? And here's the thing. Here's the thing. So I worked with many elite sports and elite athletes, and my primary sport was women's rugby. And back in the early 2000s, and certainly still now, Canadian women's rugby was an international powerhouse. You will have, you'll never have met such powerful and strong and confident and able-bodied women in so many different shapes and sizes. And the injuries they would experience were incredible because at that time it was the only full contact women's sport. I think it might still be. So, and I was like, okay, I'm working with like the best athletes in my opinion. I also play rugby myself. But when those athletes quit the sport and they started families, they would start, you know, asking me, their trusted athletic therapist, Jeanette, so I'm pregnant. Can I still lift 300 pounds in the gym? Can I still deadlift 300 pounds? And I'd be, I don't know. I don't know. Because we go back to my schooling and there was no mention of that. Mm-hmm. And you go to the internet, which in the early 2000s, really, the internet wasn't much of anything. There was no information about that, right? The research back then, there was nothing much about that. And then, of course, when they then birthed, they would be shocked and come to me and say, Jeanette, no rugby injury is as intense and as mentally challenging as childbirth, whether it was a vaginal or cesarean birth. They just had no idea what to do. And they were in so much pain and dysfunction. And they would ask me. And again, I didn't have the answers. And it seemed that no one really did of any profession. And that's when I really started getting into it. I'm like, well, listen, that, like, if pregnancy is the most intense sport any athlete can play, and childbirth is the biggest injury any body can ever sustain, why is there no rehabilitation protocol for this, even a standardized one? Checking all the Canadian hospitals, the Toronto hospitals anyways, and all the therapists that I knew of, and I was very well connected back then with a lot of international therapists, nobody had any information. And so I started really committing my passion and my continuing education, pulling from different courses that I would take, applying it to how does this affect the pregnancy and childbirth? How does this affect the musculoskeletal system, the fascial change, your strength, your core strength, like all this kind of stuff? What is the strength and conditioning program to give somebody to be able to go back to jogging as a recreational sport, going back to the gym, lifting weights, and then, of course, back to elite sport of every kind?
Great answer. So we will be focusing today on preparation for cesarean birth. But before we get into all those questions, why you choose the term cesarean birth rather than C-section? Why is that?
This was something that was pointed out to me many years ago. And I loved the idea of how the term cesarean birth makes an emotional impact on the listener. So here's what was proposed to me, and I loved it so much, I immediately changed my terminology. Because here's the thing, words matter.
Yeah. They really do.
You're both healthcare professionals. You know, if you can tell somebody, push harder, you're not pushing hard enough, versus you are doing an excellent job. Now breathe through that surge. You will maybe achieve the same action by the birthing person, but what she hears might be either fear-based or very, very supportive.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. C-section. I never really thought of this, but then, you know, C-section is something that seems like a pathology or something that has happened to you. And the hero of the birth of your child is not you, but the surgeon. The surgeon delivered your child. You had a C-section. But what if we said cesarean birth? By virtue of the term birth, birth is powerful. Birth is a rite of passage. It is something that's very active. It is something that the mother has done. It is not something that has happened to her. The hero of the story is not the surgeon. It is the mother. She has brought life into this world. And I love that idea of empowerment. And so now I use the term cesarean birth.
I love it. Does it land well with the women you meet and treat? Do they prefer it, do you feel like?
You know what? Some very... Has anyone ever said, no, I don't prefer that term? No, no one's ever said that. If anything, people get curious. They're like, oh, I've never thought of that. I kind of like that. I'm going to use that.
We have a similar one exactly. In Swedish, tjejsafödsel eller tjejsasnitt, where tjejsafödsel is more like cesarean birth. And I've heard actually one person who she felt that she couldn't, it didn't resonate with her because she really felt that this was done to her. And then she was like, for me, this was more, you know, yeah, it was done to me. But it's like that with everything. I mean, everyone won't agree. But I think in general, I agree with you that it sounds a lot more
inclusive
and empowering. Yeah.
Words matter. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, they really do.
And also, I think it involves the baby in another way. I mean, talking about a birth, you're also talking about the child. A C-section, it's not obvious that a baby's coming out even. I mean, it seems very, as you said, sterile, which it should be, of course, but that does have
and there's nothing, you know, and there have been people who have said, you know, I don't mind the term C-section, Jeanette. You know, you explained why you use cesarean birth, and I still think C-section's perfectly fine. And, you know, when it comes down to it, I think, you know, for me anyways, it's important for me just to ask, what do you prefer? You know, when I work with my clients, I worked with my students, what do you prefer? And everybody's different, and I acknowledge them, and I just go with that.
That's what we always come back to. Everyone is different. Mm-hmm. And but if you were to give, if someone is listening now, pregnant for the first time, if we want to focus on cesarean, because we don't have all the time in the world, but we're focusing on the cesarean part, what would you say are the most important ways to prepare for cesarean birth?
Honestly, the first step is the emotional and mental health piece. I don't think in the medical community, we physical therapy anyway, and definitely surgical community, we don't talk enough about the mental health impact of an unexpected surgery.
Mm.
Again, my background is working with elite athletes. When an elite athlete has to suddenly quit their sport because they forced retirement due to injury, that depression that can result can be years and years and years and years. There is an analogy with the birthing person. If you give birth in a way that you don't even expect and you experience such intense pain and discomfort and dysfunction, and sometimes, unfortunately, a lot of times, there is chronic pain and dysfunction, meaning more than 3 months. Chronicity means 3 months, years even. There is a mental health aspect, and I challenge anyone to say, oh yeah, it doesn't really relate to postpartum depression. It does. I believe it absolutely does. So when we can provide any amount of realistic expectation, when we can provide, you know, empowering tools such as words,
mm-hmm.
Words to describe the experience, to say to someone, it's okay to feel angry. It's okay to be sad, to mourn maybe a birth that you wanted and you didn't have, to feel shame. It is okay to have these feelings. And now let us work through them. For so many pregnant women, we just don't know. We just hide it. We just hold it all in. We hold it inside and we just try to push through. And we go, well, there's a newborn who needs me. I'll get to me later. Mm-hmm. So that mental health part is massive. So one actionable tip that I would say is get your mental health support network in advance. Whether you have a vaginal or a cesarean birth, especially if you're a first-time mom, listen, my friends, you won't even know what's hit you. You won't even know. You want all your trusted aunties and your friends and your mother, anyone who's been through it, who is empowering and supportive. You need to line them up and say, listen, I need each of you to text me or come visit, whatever. Every day I need someone. Someone needs to check up on me. Mental health wise, how are you doing, Asabia? How are you doing? Can I bring something over for you? You know, that's the support. That's the mental health support. So the professional support too is going to be important. Again, vaginal or cesarean birth, but especially for an emergency, unexpected cesarean. Mm-hmm. For myself, I can say that for people who are pregnant, I send them a questionnaire. It's a psychological questionnaire you can do online. It's called the DAS questionnaire. A lot of different mental health experts use different kinds of questionnaires where a client can answer the questions and kind of quantify where their mental health is based on a number. Low number meaning low risk of depression, anxiety, stress. Middle number is medium risk. High number is high risk. And so for me and the moms I work with, we repeat this DAS questionnaire every 2 weeks so that she can kind of see, oh, are my numbers, you know, staying pretty good? Or maybe they're getting higher. And if they're getting higher, then this is the time they, you know, might want to mobilize their professional support network. And maybe the last thing I want to say about the mental health is that moms, it is not exclusively your job. Your support network's job is to support you. You don't have to tell them every day, I need support. They are going to be delegated well ahead of time that they should know to support you. They are going to give you that DAS questionnaire every 2 weeks. They are going to call in on you. They are going to check in on you. It's too much for you then to also manage the support that you need, right? So delegation. Delegation is probably the biggest thing that would be helpful. And then, of course, to have those individuals follow through.
That's so good that you point that out, that it is, I mean, the support network's responsibility to take care of the new parent. I'd say another thing that I'm thinking that will help, at least that I think help a lot of people, is just knowing a little bit about what happens during a cesarean birth. Because I think a lot of fear comes from not knowing, just like in vaginal births. You have this idea of it's going to be so cold and sterile and nobody's going to be talking. There's going to be blood. I don't know. I mean, people have all these fantasies, and just finding out some basic information. This is how long it takes. These are the people who are going to be there. These are the options I have. That will make it less scary. I mean, just having some information. So just read. I mean, there's a really good book, a Swedish book called Kejsarsnitt. It's a really thin, small book where you just get the basics. This is what happens, more or less. Mm-hmm. And I think that also can prepare you in a way. So it doesn't seem so scary.
Well, I always say, knowledge is power.
Definitely.
Knowledge is empowering. And to individuals who are, so I'm going to ask a question. I'm going to say, okay, who wants to hear what the cesarean surgery actually entails? Actually, I'd love to describe it because the knowledge is power. And for any listener who's listening, they might, you know, if your initial response is, oof, I don't want to hear it, that's scary, I invite you to ask yourself, why do you think that's scary? Because that is the mental health piece. What is underlying all that fear? And this is not a psychological therapy podcast, but nor am I a psychological therapist. But may I share the surgery? Can I tell listeners what it entails? Okay. So the second piece of mental health is that knowledge is power. The first piece is support network, yeah? Professional and also, you know, your personal support network. The second piece is knowledge is power. Here's a piece of knowledge that I want all of your listeners to know. Because when I heard about what the cesarean birth surgery actually entailed, I myself as a therapist, I was like, okay, I had no idea. This is standard information as a therapist. I think we should all know. So the first question I'm going to ask all your listeners is this. How many cuts do you think is in the surgery? So everyone just answer in your head, whatever you think that may be. Actually, I'm going to ask both of you. So before, I'm going to assume you know about the surgery. Asabia, before you heard about the surgery, how many cuts did you think there were in the surgery?
Oh, I don't know if I thought about it before, but now I know the answer, but I would say maybe, did I think three? Yeah, maybe three, something like that.
Yeah. Apokoa, you would have said three.
Yeah, I think so. I'm thinking like, if I think what a body looks, I would be like, okay, maybe through the skin, then some fat, and then through the uterus. That's what I would think.
Look at, okay, so clearly both of you have way more educated guess than I did, because when I first looked at a cesarean scar, well, we see one scar. So I just thought, well, it's one cut.
Mm-hmm. One
must be one cut. It's one scar.
Yeah, one, right? As someone who knows the anatomy of the human body implicitly, I still just assumed it was just one cut. One right through all the way to the uterus. There we go. You know, I didn't really think a lot about it. No. And many of your listeners won't have thought a lot about it, because I bet you a lot of you listeners would have said one cut. But the answer is in fact three. And there are many, many more than three layers that are cut through. And I'm being overly simplified. The layers are, so usually horizontal, the first layer, skin and fat. There's actually a second horizontal layer through the fascia. Okay, and that's a little, like about an inch or two above that external horizontal incision. That's pulled open. Then there's a second vertical incision down the linea alba. And for your listeners, if you've ever heard of the term diastasis recti, well, that vertical cut goes right through your diastasis recti. That pulls open your muscular wall like a curtain. There's stuff in the way, so just to simplify it, a lot of stuff is moved aside, and then your uterus is exposed. And then a third, usually horizontal cut, is made through the entire thickness of the uterine wall. You birth your baby. Then there are stitches, one layer that holds together the uterus, arguably the most powerful muscle in the human body. Only one layer of stitches. That second cut down the linea alba, for the most part here in Canada anyways, not stitched at all. It's just left to heal on its own. And then that external incision, usually horizontal, is either stitched or stapled, maybe it's glued, subcutaneous stitches, steri-strips, covering. Every surgeon is different. So this is the point where when I describe this to, you know, people who are working with me for the first time, I pause and I say, what are you thinking? One word, what are you thinking? And I ask all your listeners to do this now, because some people will say, oh my gosh, the human body is incredible. I can't believe that surgery is going to happen to me and I'm going to be walking around just fine. Like, that's incredible. But the majority of listeners will have panic and fear struck into them. They'll be like, oh my God, this is nothing that I ever experienced before. This is nothing that I expected. What is going to happen to me? And to those listeners, I want to tell you, you will be able to heal from this. The human body was designed to heal in spite of us. I mean, think of how many cesarean birth moms have gone and had their cesarean births, over 30 million per year around the world, to be exact. Okay. Walking around having no recovery whatsoever and no education whatsoever, and you will heal.
Yeah.
Caveat, that is different than recover. So to all the moms who are listening, you have now the gift to search and seek for cesarean birth recovery information, because I want you to lead a life with no pain, full confidence in your body, and full strength, because that is absolutely 100% possible.
Lovely. I want to have some time for, we have some listener questions. I know a lot of people are interested in specifically scar tissue massage because that's kind of new topic, I'd say, at least in Sweden. I'm starting to hear it more and more. And I think you're the one that introduced it to me, actually. And I learned a lot from you. It's nothing that I learned in midwifery school or anything, but now we're talking about it more. And if a common question is how early one can start with scar tissue massage and what it can look like in the early days.
Excellent question. So this talks about preparation. I love this because I bet this mom is like, what lotions do I have to get ahead of time? I'm going to learn. I'm going to like, you know. So first of all, props to the mom who asked. Okay. So first what I want to do is define what C-section scar massage actually is. Because we're going to hear more about it. Of course, now that we've said it, your Instagram is going to be populated with C-section scar massage videos because that's what the algorithm does. So here's the thing. Cesarean birth scar massage is the manipulation of the soft tissue, either with a tool or with your hands, okay, for the purposes of increasing mobility. That is a very therapy textbook description. Now, in layman's terms, what is massage for? It's to decrease or eliminate pain. It's to decrease or eliminate swelling, which, by the way, you haven't mentioned this yet, but the C-section shelf or that appearance of that puffiness of the abdominals with the tight scar, there is no actual medical term for it. I use the word C-section shelf because if you Google it, that's what you say or that's what you see. Scar massage can absolutely help with that in the early days. And then strength. C-section or cesarean birth scar massage connects your brain to your muscles again. And that will help with strength and being able to engage those muscles properly when you're going through the exercises. Okay. So that's, I feel also what, maybe that's why we do it.
A mental aspect, and I feel people can be fearful of touching or approaching the scar. Maybe it can help, just being comfortable with one's body again and what's happened to it. Yeah.
So, okay. So that's an excellent, excellent point. And by the way, the question is, how soon can I start? The answer is, so the direct massage where we're actually manipulating the soft tissue for the purposes of getting it to move more, that type of massage starts after you're discharged by your medical professional. Here in Canada, that's around a 6-week mark. We just want to make sure there's no infections. We want to make sure the scar has closed completely, okay? So to answer that question, 6 weeks. However, here's the cesarean birth prep tip, number 3 that I wanted to share, is you can actually start indirect scar massage on day 1. How? With belly breathing. So when we move our bellies, when we're breathing into the bellies, what happens is then, well, all the tissues move. You're not touching it, but you're moving the tissues as you breathe. What does that do to scar tissue that's getting laid down by the human body? It tells your body, hey, Jeanette doesn't want the scar to be so darn tight because she actually wants to be able to move here. Okay, cool. We're going to close these wounds, I'm sorry, because there's 3 major incisions. We're going to close these wounds, but we're going to make sure that she's going to be able to belly breathe. Okay, so you're actually massaging your scars from the inside. That's day 1, folks. So as long as it's pain-free, if you take even as few as 5 slow belly breaths, inhale into your belly, exhale, gently pick your belly back up. Asabi, I feel like you're doing this right now because you're hugging your baby.
I
feel like you're picking up. I'm doing it right now.
I actually do it sometimes, even now, just to engage my, you know, core of it. So I can't help it when you start talking about it.
I know. Right? This is awesome. So the other benefit of belly breathing isn't just scar massage. Asabi, I just said it. So tip number 4, belly breathing is still the same tip. But the reason why you do belly breathing is to re-engage your transverse abdominis again, that deep abdominal muscle. All the abdominal muscles were cut through, but that deep abdominal muscle needs to especially be connected to your brain. It is the thing that supports the diastasis. And of course, then talks to the pelvic floor and the respiratory diaphragm. So friends, if you're pregnant listening to this, start now. Yeah. Do your belly breathing. Inhale, let your belly hang. Exhale, pick up your belly. This you can do now. And this is the first rehab exercise you would do day one out of surgery. I should say, after vaginal or cesarean birth.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the first exercise.
And how often, if people want, you know, very precise directives, how often? Can you do it too often?
Great question. So how often? First of all, listen to your own body. Yeah. So Jeanette is just a therapist across the, I'm in Canada. I haven't seen your body. I can't assess your body. So you are actually the best therapist for yourself. Mm-hmm. What do I mean by that? If you do belly breathing and it hurts, then either breathe a little smaller so that it doesn't hurt, or just take a break and try again maybe tomorrow. Surgery is very, very acutely aggressive for the human body. It drives that sympathetic nervous system response right up. Sometimes movement makes it worse. So sometimes bracing and being still is actually what your body needs day one. Everybody is different after surgery. So please, mama, just listen to your own body. If it hurts, give it a break.
Yeah. And try again.
If it doesn't hurt. Yeah. If it doesn't hurt, do up to five. And I would say every hour.
Okay. Every hour. Okay. Is it ever too late to start massaging your scar?
Oh, this is an amazing question. So I know this is not about cesarean birth preparation anymore, but the answer is no, it's never too late to start massaging. But my question would be back to the mom and ask her, okay, if you're years postpartum and you're like, I want to do cesarean scar massage, my question to her is why?
Yeah.
Because she may say, well, I want to improve the way the scar looks. And I would then say to her, well, you need to understand that at years and years post-surgery, scar tissue has already healed. It's tight, it's stuck. Mm. So to change that scar tissue with your own hands is unlikely, but there are machines that therapists like myself can use to kind of wake up that scar tissue again to make a difference. If she's saying, listen, I want to start scar massage because, oh my gosh, my brain is not connected to my ab muscles, like maybe it's all stuck down, then I would say, yes. If it is in fact stuck down, meaning this, the fascia, not the scar tissue anymore, if the fascia is stuck, then yes, massage will absolutely help. And let me show you how.
Another question that's pretty common is the taping of the scar. That's also something that's recommended here in Sweden sometimes, but some people have never heard of it. Some people have heard of it. Do you recommend taping the scar? And if so, for how long and with what kind of tape do you recommend?
And how often do you change the tape?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And from
this
when do you start?
So,
what tape?
All the questions. So I want to ask you first, Asabia, who talks about scar taping? Is it the doctors that would tell the moms afterwards? How would a mom hear about it?
Either the doctor, I said more frequently, maybe the midwife, but it's not it isn't something that we learn in midwifery school. Like this is something to say, but it's more it would be the individual experience of that midwife or someone knowledgeable of that. So, which is
okay.
Too bad. Unfortunately, some people get some advice, some people get completely other advice or no advice at all. But that would be probably, the midwife at the hospital.
So that would be the same here in Canada. Certainly different therapists, different medical professionals would have different experiences. So I can answer this question based on the way I provide therapy to the moms that I see. So yes, I used to recommend a scar tape that was developed here in Toronto by a surgeon who works with burn accident patients. Hmm. And this particular type of tape would improve the flexibility of the scar as it healed. Because if you imagine a burn, oh my goodness, you don't want that burn scar to be super tight. That'll be pain for the rest of your life. Obviously, a cesarean scar is much smaller in comparison. But it can still be very tight and can cause a lot of tension and chronic pain over time. So that type of tape will improve flexibility of the scar as it's healing, but also improve the appearance. So if the scar is thick or darker or raised, this particular scar tape would help with that. Now, it is no longer being made. So unfortunately, I cannot recommend that particular scar tape. And I'm actually in the in my own experience of researching and finding other types of scar tapes. And of course, I would have to test it on willing clients, right? Before I would truly feel confident in recommending another scar tape. Now, that being said, I have worked with definitely a lot of other practitioners who recommend, let's say, silicone scar tape.
Yeah.
Right? Silicone does a couple of things. It protects the actual scar as it's healing because it's thicker. Yeah. You know, it also, if you're in Canada, you're wearing clothes, you're not, you know, wearing a nice flowy dress because it's not warm here. It's not warm here. So if you're wearing pants and they're, you know, frictioning, or your compression garment seems to have a seam and it's frictioning or whatever, you know, that silicone patch can add a little layer of buffer, decreases that, in, you know, that irritation. And then some people, some therapists that I work with say, you know, these silicone scars really do help with the appearance and the, you know, the scar thickness. But again, I personally haven't had experience with that. I'm so sorry. You're like, no, Jeanette's going to give us the answer. No, but Jeanette has no answer.
Jeanette, I'm sorry. Do you have to leave now? It's time.
Oh, shoot. I do. I do.
Okay. But I do. You know what?
Let's close it down.
Yeah. But let's, I would love to have you back because we have so many more questions. This is such a big topic, but I would love to schedule another. Let's do another podcast at another. But you really shared so much important information. I think it will be really helpful to our listeners and giving them many new perspectives and ideas.
Where can they find you?
Where can they find me? I'm on Instagram and TikTok. My handle is the same on both. It's Ask Jeanette. Jeanette is spelled J-A-N-E-T-T-E. Ask me all your questions there. You find a lot of information, videos, etc., about cesarean birth preparation and rehabilitation. And the one thing I wanted to share with you too is my website, JeanetteYee.com, and on that you will find a little tab called resources, which also include this one resource I want everybody to know about. It's called Cesarean Birth, the 10 things your doctor wants you to know, bracket, but didn't have the time to tell you. So it's the 10 things for cesarean birth preparation. So I would love all your listeners to grab a hold of that.
Perfect. And great. And the Yi is spelled Y-E-E, right?
Correct. Yes.
Okay. Good. Lovely having you on our podcast. I hope that you'll be back very soon. Take care.
Oh my
care.
Goodness. Thank you so very much. Thank
Time
you so much.
Time flies when you have fun, right?
It really does.
Okay. Thank you guys for listening. Tack att ni lyssnade. Jeanette kommer tillbaka vid ett annat tillfälle.
Puss och kram.
Puss och kram.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.